Spooked. That's the nothing personal word of the day. It is Thursday, May 2nd, 2024. And boy, those New York Knicks have the Philadelphia Sixers owners spooked. So much so that a former owner, Michael Rubin of Fanatics, no longer owns any part of the Sixers. He had to divest himself because he runs a sports book. More on that later. David Blitzer, Josh Harris, names that you know of, own the Sixers, own the Devils, a bunch of soccer teams. Oh, and Josh Harris is the one who owns the Commanders. They all got together and they came up with a brilliant plan. They don't want to see Joel Embiid at game six cry. They don't want to see him limp around and complain that the home crowd in Philadelphia was too New York Knick-based. They want to make sure that it's a Philly home crowd. And then they publicized through Twitter, Michael Rubin on X, blurted out that 2,000 tickets will be bought by the owners of the team. Josh Harris, David Blitzer, David Adelman, and I just bought more than 2,000 tickets for Sixers game six. We absolutely cannot let Knicks fans take over our arena again. I have so many comments on this. Let me start with the following. In an arena, you have season tickets. If you've got a 20,000 seat arena and you have 12, 13,000 season tickets, those are people who buy 41 game plans. That's a full season ticket. They could buy 20 game plans, 10 game, 5 game. Anytime you have the same seat or access to the same section for more than one game, you are considered a season ticket holder. There's 41 home games. If there's a 20 and a 21 game holder, that adds up to one full season equivalent. Let's say there are about 13,000 full season equivalents. That means you still have to sell, call it 7,000 more tickets. You do that with group sales. You do that with individual sales. That's why you hear about theme nights and giveaways and all the different things that different arenas do in order to sell the difference between their number of FSEs and capacity. I come from a place where it was always an issue having other teams' fans in our ballpark. I never complained much because it was nice to have anyone in our ballpark, no matter who they were cheering for. The only job that I had to do was be in the clubhouse before a game to tell the players what the makeup of the crowd was likely going to be so they would be ready for it when a home game felt more like a very sparsely attended road game. The players would say, it's not ideal, but it'll be nice to have people in the ballpark. That's the perspective of people who are used to playing in front of small crowds. Hey, just give me anyone. I don't mind going on the road and playing in sold-out stadiums, and I certainly don't mind more people in my stadium. The owner, on the other hand, has a totally different view. They are despondent. I'm not. I'm trying to convince the owner, look at this revenue. They're despondent because they're embarrassed, and they feel as though it's a bad look to have visiting team with support. I've been to a lot of road games, both back when I was a fan and as a executive in sports. And I've always told you I like road games better both ways. Certainly as an executive, because I'm not worried about hot dogs or parking or lines at the concession stand. I'm not worried about if the Jumbotron doesn't break. I'm loving life, watching the game, focused on the play. As a fan in a visiting stadium, it would be nice that the only thing you're thinking about, which is what I used to do, which is let's just make sure that we win and we can cheer, but don't cheer too loudly. We don't want to make a spectacle of ourselves. At game seven of the 1994 finals, I wore a Knicks jersey, a Ewing jersey, and I remember clear as day, and this is 30 years ago, when the game ended and the Rockets had won the championship, I remember taking off the Ewing jersey and putting it in my pocket because I was worried that with all of the potential violence or all of the hubbub of a championship, that I didn't want to be an outward Knick fan at that moment. We all have heard the stories of horrific, violent, felonious behavior toward road fans. It doesn't happen often. When it does, it's newsworthy and it's criminal. But what the Sixers owners were doing yesterday has nothing to do with trying to protect fans. They literally said to themselves, what can we do to stop Knick fans from buying tickets? So they took the available seats, not the good seats, the available seats, and they're going to donate them to first responders and other people in Philadelphia for free. And they're taking a victory lap as though, A, look at how gracious we are, but B, look at what a great Sixers town this will be. If it were such a great Sixers town and people thought the Sixers had a chance, you wouldn't have 2,000 extra seats, but let's not quibble over that. Do you think for a minute that there will be fewer Knicks fans in the building because of what Harris and Blitzer are doing with Rubin buying these 2,000 seats? And if you were going to execute a strategy like that, there's a very simple rule. Keep it to yourself. If we tried to restrict zip codes in the secondary market to try to make sure we had Marlins fans, didn't do it, wouldn't do it, don't care. But if you were going to do it, you don't publicize it, let people find out, and then you can ask for forgiveness instead of permission, and you can ease up and change that requirement. Or you can incentivize your season ticket holders in the secondary market to sell back to you. And then you can control the distribution to Sixers fans. You can't tell a season ticket holder who to sell to. As a matter of fact, it's a terrible look, one that Michael Rubin is pretty used to now. He's gotten a ton of heat over MLB jerseys, said it was Nike, not him. Turns out to be right. He got a ton of heat yesterday for celebrating people losing on his private, not private, on it is private, I guess, on his small book web sports betting app, saying thank you all for betting the Knicks, way to lose. Can you imagine walking into a casino and having the casino root against you? They don't. News alert, casinos actually want you to win because you'll have a happier trip and you'll come back. You're going to lose eventually, but they love it when you win. They celebrate wins. You get comped. You get all these things when you win to make sure that you come back. It's like when you're playing poker with your friends and you win and they say, hey, you got to come back and play the next game. Casino betting, sports betting, when you win, make sure you come back and stay at our app and stay at our hotel, et cetera, and go to lose again. Be entertained again. So Ruben got into a whole kerfuffle rooting for people to lose money for at his book. But then Ruben is the spokesperson as a non-owner. I started wondering whether Harris and Blitzer were angry. Did they co-sign on this information getting out? And if so, why? What's the upside? It's causing mock. And you think that Knick fans aren't going to now be louder? And on top of that, when you have fans who buy season tickets, you can't tell them not to sell to whoever they want to at the highest price. You can tell your fans you can't sell to secondary ticket brokers. We had rules like that. You may not sell your tickets to brokers. Great. But when you're selling them on the regular secondary market, StubHub, or when you're giving them to friends who are paying you for them, are you not allowed to help to fray the cost of your entire season ticket by selling to a Knicks fan who wants to be there for a potential clinching game set 6 in Philadelphia, where you can pay for half your year? I live in a place where people rent out their houses during the summer, and you can pay your entire mortgage for the year by renting your house out for 2 months. Nowhere is it written you better rent your house out to someone who likes New York sports. Want to rent your house out, which I would never do because having a stranger in my house is, can you, Matt? Side note, Coca, I get the whole Airbnb helped defray the cost as an investment property. But to Airbnb a place that's your primary source of residence, I'm going to try to put my, I'm going to try to be empathetic to people who need that revenue. Then do it. I get it. I would sooner work with my hands, which I don't know how to do, and be a light bulb changer to raise money to help supplement my income than allow someone to use my toilet. I just can't even comprehend it. But that said, there are people who do it and they pay for 10 months of mortgage. Sixers season ticket holders or any team season ticket holders, if you have the ability to do it, you can't stop it. And why would you even as an owner try to put in a position where the feeling is that that is what they want you to do? Keep the tickets within the family of Sixers fans. I'm rooting for the Knicks anyway, obviously, and I want the Knicks to win the game. But here's what I'm really rooting for tonight and what I want you to listen for when we watch this game tonight at 9 o'clock. For those of you complaining about the late start, just be happy you weren't alive in the 80s. But anyway, I mean, 12% of you were alive in the 80s. I think what's going to happen when we watch the game tonight from, what is it, Wells Fargo, Coca? I think it is going to be so many Knicks fans and that it's just going to be an avenue to make further fun of Harris and Blitzer and Rubin for this asinine PR plan. And I think that the tickets that they bought are so far above the camera angle that we're only going to see the blue jerseys, the Marlins, hello, 4869. Old habits die hard. The Knicks jerseys. I don't think the 2,000 seats they bought are anything other than nosebleeders, which are obviously outside of the camera range. I think it's going to be an absolute disaster, and I'm here for it, and I'm going to watch it. Wait to see is when I tell you something's going to happen. If it does, great. If it doesn't, fine. We'll revisit it. We have a whole list of wait to sees. I don't know if something happened to our website, davidsampsonpodcast.com, Coca. Yesterday, I got 8 different inquiries. I'm holding up 4 fingers. Don't know why. 8 different inquiries asking where we publish our top 100 movie list. I think we have to get better word out there. DavidSampsonPodcast.com. There's a tab which has a document which has 100 movies, all the wait to sees, all the nothing personal picks of the day, all the words of the day. It has everything. DavidSampsonPodcast.com. The wait to see today is that the Sixers, in front of a gaggle of Knicks fans, will force a game 7. All the Knicks fans are going to be super despondent. I was watching the 2 games last night. I got a few things that we need to comment on. Number one, when you've got a player who's always injured, and I'm not talking about Stephen A. Smith and his diatribe, which we're not going to show here, criticizing Mike Trout for being injured all the time and impugning baseball players and how difficult or not difficult it is to be a baseball player. Well, I have to, actually. Anyone who says that has never met a professional baseball player or lived with a professional baseball player or been inside a professional baseball team. The grind of a season of baseball is unlike any other sport. In football, every week, it's like getting into a car accident, granted. Basketball, you need good cardio, but they all blaze. Baseball, every day, you are 2.5 to 3 hours. You're standing. It's fast twitch movements. Then you're cooling down. Then you're heating up, or you're throwing a ball 90 miles an hour, or you're trying to figure out how to hit a ball that's coming at you at 98 miles an hour. I have great sympathy for injuries, though I can't stand paying players not to play. But to question Mike Trout, I don't even know where I got into that. Maybe because people are, why are we talking about Mike Trout? Oh, because we're talking about Kawhi Leonard. At what point do you say Kawhi Leonard, world champion Kawhi Leonard, he of the greatest shot over the Sixers in their franchise history? At what point do we say that Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers. Paul George and the Clippers. James Harden and the Clippers. It's just not going to work. Kawhi Leonard sat out the last several games. He's played a couple games. We told you that the minute you acquire Russell Westbrook, you're done. The minute you acquire James Harden, you're done. But Steve Ballmer didn't believe us. The Clippers now find themselves down 3-2 against the Mavericks. They lost game five at home. Losing a game five at home when you're tied at two, that is despondency beyond repair. Because now the Mavs get to go home for game six. Home court advantage used to mean a whole lot more in the NBA. But that said, Mavericks going home for game six. I'm wondering whether Steve Ballmer looks at this season once they're eliminated and says, all right, we're moving into our new facility. We've doubled down here on Leonard, Kawhi, Westbrook, and Harden. And it turns out that we can't win squat. Similar to what I wonder Pat Riley's thinking about his Heat. I'm going to be on Levitard, Coca, in about an hour and 11 minutes live. They're all going to be licking their wounds and despondent that the Heat got eliminated by the Celtics. Thinking back to only a couple short days ago when life was so wonderful. They had won game two on the road in Boston, and the feeling was, wow, we could do this. We could be the eighth seed and ride it all the way to the finals like we did last year. You can do magic. Bum, bum, bum. You can have anything that you desire. Pat Riley is waking up singing some songs today, deciding whether he's going to blow up the team, quote unquote. It's a terrible expression. Deciding whether he's going to say that this run is over. Is this window over? My answer is a resounding yes, but what a window it's been. Two finals appearances, a conference finals appearance, and two first round losses since the bubble. That's a run. Now, it didn't give you a ring, but it's one heck of a run. So here's the suggestion. Pat Riley used to be the top two executives in all of basketball. People are worried that his age has made him stubborn, that he has not been able to adjust with the game. It's a bunch of horse hockey. Pat Riley is just fine. It's really hard, though, to acknowledge when your window has closed and you're old, because you feel as though that you're not going to be able to be alive when the next window opens. There's a huge psychology about that with owners or executives who are octogenarians or soon to be octogenarians. You feel like, A, don't buy me green bananas, but B, don't start me over. Can't do it. I don't have that horizon. For Heat fans, you better hope that Pat Riley is very willing to start over, because otherwise the Heat are finished. Nothing personal pick of the day, presented by DraftKings Fantasy Sports. Check out what DraftKings has to offer this season with code SAMSON, because life's more fun when you're in on the action. DraftKings. The crown is yours. We are 55-64. We had the Mavs over the Clippers last night. Win. We had Corbin Burns over the Yankees. Remember, that was going to be to win the third of four games to make today a gravy game. Well, the Yankees shut him out 2-0. Now the Orioles are trying to win a game to make sure they win the series 3 out of 4. Picks tonight, presented by DraftKings Fantasy Sports. Sixers -3 over the Knicks. You thought it was just going to be a wait to see? The Sixers will force a Game 7 back at the world's most famous arena. And in baseball, I am being stubborn. The Houston Astros are going to recover from this absolutely horrific start. It is May 2nd, time to play. Astros -130 over the surprising Cleveland Guardians. Those are your nothing personal picks of the day, presented by DraftKings. Raise your hand if you're sure that Deion Sanders is a fraud. Anybody? Raise your hand if you're sure that Deion Sanders was a shooting star of a coaching flame where the sports media could not wait to coronate him as the greatest thing since sliced bread. When are you going to move to the NFL? When are you going to take over as the greatest college coach in the history of the world or become the greatest NFL coach and be primetime Super Bowl man? Raise your hand. You were all a part of it. Every last one of you. It was just not even a year ago. Colorado won his first four games against sleepy, dopey, sneezy, and grumpy. And that's it. Deion Sanders has great PR. Don't kid yourself. He was great on the Twitter. He was great selling tickets to all the spring practices and preseason games. We did a bunch of segments on Nothing Personal, on the business of Deion Sanders. Is he already paying for himself due to the increased number of season ticket holders in Colorado, plus all the general excitement, the primetime games? The thing about a shooting star is that they're so brilliant and beautiful while they're shooting, and then they're done. And you're looking at the sky and saying, huh, wonder where that star is now. It didn't blow up. Although I'm not an archaeologist. I have no idea if that's true. It's definitely not archaeology, Coca. That's funny. I'm not an archaeologist. What's it called when you're studying stars? A cosmopologist? A cosmetologist? An ophthalmologist? An astrologist? Thank you, Coca. Did not have that word at the tip of the old tongue. Hi, my name is David Sampson. I'm a Pisces. Or is that not an astrologist? Sorry. All right, you want to? We can do that. Hi. 4669. Deion Sanders has a small problem. The small problem is that he's got a big finger, and he likes to get on social media, use the big finger with the big mouth, and create some issues that are frankly quite embarrassing for the university, and frankly for himself. The background is that there was a story in The Athletic. There are a bunch of players who were eliminated by Deion Sanders. They were cut by him last year when he took over. Totally normal when you take over a program to jettison the players who were there under the last administration. It's like when a new boss comes into a company, they bring their own people. I get it. I dig it. I'm fine with it. What I'm not particularly fine with is when the coach then, and you certainly would never hear a Nick Saban or a, I don't know, a Kirby Smart. You wouldn't hear any real coach is not going to MF the players who left the program that he is entering. But there was this problem where a former player came out and said that he was upset, feels like he didn't get a chance from Deion, didn't feel the love from Deion. He was forced to transfer. His name is Xavier Smith. I think he transferred to Austin Peay, and then now he's at UTEP. Whatever his provenance is, isn't relevant. But he was just quoting the article saying, listen, I was actually getting mad. Like tears coming to my eyes. That's sad, not mad. Because, bro, you never even tried to get to know me. Bro, meaning Deion. And for whatever reason, Deion's son, who's the quarterback at Colorado, who I can't believe we didn't talk about this pre-show, Coca. Is this guy, Sanders, the quarterback for Colorado, is he a consensus top five in next year's mock draft? Because Shador apparently must be a top five quarterback because that's what his father called him. And so the answer is that he could be a top pick with a good season, according to our draft expert, Matthew Coca of Sampson Coca Law and Company. With Sarah. I think Sarah, you get now a with. You're not part of the name of the firm yet, but you're like an associate. So you're a with. Sampson Coca Law with Sarah. Going to be a top pick with a good season. Well, we're going to be a top podcast if we just keep going. So Shador Sanders responded on X by saying, I don't even remember this guy talking about Xavier Smith. Bro had to be very mid at best. That's a quote because I'm not cool enough to say that, meaning he's average. So then all sorts of other Colorado players were tweeting about Smith. But then Deion joined the fray. And he commented on Smith's teammate, not even on Smith, on Smith's teammate who was defending Smith and saying what a bad player that person is. And it was the worst look I've ever seen. And I started thinking, why is Deion Sanders on Twitter impugning the football skills of a teammate, of a guy who played for a hot second in Colorado? What'd be the upside? Because Deion Sanders still believes that he's the shooting star, superstar coach, even though it got tarnished last year after that great start, even though that even after a year in his program, he had a bunch of people enter the portal, because it turns out maybe wanting to coach or thinking you can coach is a whole lot different once you have to coach. Once the opening press conferences and PR and all the special stories on ESPN and all of the worldwide media attention, well, it's at least countrywide media attention, which does nothing but buttress your ego to a place that you are amongst the stars, then the game starts. Hey, what are we doing here on 4th and 2? Punt? What play are we calling? Four left, right, hike. Being a football coach is hard. You got to prepare. Hey, look at the other team. Are you ready? Look at that defense. They're doing the Omaha 3 defense. Deion, what? Which one's that? Oh, you didn't practice? You didn't study? Deion Sanders spent so much time figuring out how to promote Deion Sanders that he forgot that no one actually gives a flying rat's pituitary gland if you stink. The beginning's going to feel really good. It's sort of like my nepotism thing. Easy to get in the door with nepotism, but hard as hell to stay there. You got to be good at what you do. Deion Sanders can be everything Colorado wanted for the first month, and then what? You know how this ends, Coca? And I hate to say this. As a matter of fact, I'm going to give you an official wait to see that we did not discuss before the show started. An official wait to see. Deion Sanders will not be coaching the Colorado football team in 2025. He will have one more year with Colorado this year in 24, and that will be it. Book that as a wait to see. When we come back, we're going to review one of my top 100 movies, and then we're going to talk about what the Red Sox are doing and why this could be the last show for Samson and Coca if we get hired by any teams to do what the Red Sox need. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back to Nothing Personal. It's David Sampson coming at you every day live at 8 a.m. on the Nothing Personal with David Sampson YouTube channel. Please subscribe. You're watching it, so might as well hit the subscribe button so it gets pushed to you. Keep downloading the audio show and telling your friends about it. And by the way, we're also on DraftKings Network, which you can find in myriad places at 10 a.m. every single morning. Still watching a movie every day, still getting through our top 100 movies. Every single Thursday will be a new movie from the top 100 to review. This week, it's The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. That is a movie I talk about Walter Mitty all the time. The reference I make to Walter Mitty is that it's someone who doesn't live in the present and has these strange illusions of what he is capable of doing. The Secret Life of Walter Mitty is Ben Stiller, who is putting himself in all these crazy situations and able to do all of these crazy things. I was lucky enough. I love the movie. Let me start with that. Please watch it. It is a very emotional movie. The end with Kristen Wiig, it brings me to tears every time. The scene with Sean Penn explaining to you when it's okay to use a camera and when it's not is something that you should all pay attention to, because so many of us experience life like this. You ever gone to a concert and everybody's watching the concert only on their phone because to make sure their video is good? What about putting your phone down and having that moment? Or if you're with someone, have one person video and then one person engage with the actual live concert and then switch if you want to get video of the whole thing. There is something about experiencing life in person. There's something about taking these adventures. And I don't want to flex or brag, but I took a trip to Iceland and I got to ride exactly where Ben Stiller skateboarded down into a town in Iceland when he was skateboarding down the hill. Tried to recreate that. Just watch The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. Okay. Random number generator. What do I get to watch for next Thursday? I loved watching Mitty again. Let's see what it's going to be. Coke is going to put it on the screen. He's going to hit go. And when he does, there'll be a movie up there. Inglourious Basterds. I have not watched that movie in a super long time from start to finish. That's a perfect timing to watch that movie. Thank you. Inglourious Basterds. That'll be next Thursday's movie of the day. So one of the things about our show that more and more people have been asking me as we've been growing is you're live at 8 o'clock, but when I'm listening to the show, Coca is not good at his job because he keeps in there every time you say edit that, Coca, or you start over at 4869. And for those who are new to the show, that's part of the show, that no matter what happens, we're live and we give it to you as we do it. There's no teleprompter. I've got a few notes here. I've got Coca in my right ear. I've got Coca in a document, in a Google document, where he can type things loudly or softly, depending on what we're talking about. But I make mistakes, and it's okay to make mistakes. We're here every day, 50 minutes. Of course, I'm going to get some stuff wrong. I want to give you two corrections, one from just today. It is not an astrologist. It's an astronomer. Those are the ones studying the stars. Astrologists are the ones that'll tell you not to go out if your sign isn't right. The second correction is a little more serious. Someone wrote in and get to me at David P. Sampson on Twitter or davidsampsonpodcast.com. When you've got a correction that Coca misses or Sarah misses or I miss, just tell me. Hi, David. Sorry to be a pain. It's not a pain when you have a correction. I think you referred to people reacting to the OKC bombing through the lens of a post-9/11 world, but the OKC bombing was pre-9/11. Thanks for doing the show every day. You're welcome. We are codependent. The OKC bombing was 1995, and what I was trying to say when reviewing an American bombing yesterday, and I completely got the timeline wrong, is that it was staggering to me how quickly we all went to, after that bombing, that it must have been international terrorism. It couldn't be domestic terrorism. And I thought that it was on after 9/11, where everybody was so sensitive about terrorism. What I forgot is that it was after the 1993 attempt to raise the World Trade Centers, which is not talked about much because it got overshadowed when it actually happened in 2001. But after 93, there was all of this concern about international terrorism that ended up coming quite true 8 years later. But in 95, that was the first thought when it shouldn't have been. It was totally domestic terrorism, totally about right-wing fanaticism and racism. It was, well, international terrorism can also be about racism, but this was fully domestic. But that's where my head was. Thank you for that correction. I will make corrections on the air. I'm not ashamed. I'm ashamed that I'm not a consultant. Maybe I should have done that after leaving baseball after 18 years. I could have just put out a shingle, DPS Consulting. Come to me. I'll help you get public money. I'll help you figure out how to run your team, help you become profitable, help raise the level of your asset worth. I got another thing I can help you if you want. I can help make you understand your employees and what they're doing. It's very easy if you're a team president to know what your employees do. You got to see them and speak to them and speak to the people who they report to, speak to the people all the way down and up the chain. That's called getting to know your company and having people who are your lieutenants whose job is to figure out what people do and then communicate with you on a daily and weekly basis. But GMs in baseball are way too busy. They've got so much to do. They don't have time to get to know anything. So here's what the Red Sox did. They found this company who somehow has suckered in the Niners, the Rams, the Eagles, the Mavericks, and the Wizards and said, here's what we're going to do. We're a Sportsology group. This is from Alex Spire. We're a Sportsology group. We're going to conduct an audit of the organization and offer recommendations to Craig Breslow, the new chief baseball officer, former player of mine, about potential changes in the team's baseball operations. The hope is that the audit helps Breslow get a better feel for the entire organization. I'm trying to think of the biggest, a bigger bunch of horse hockey crap than that. Now, don't unfollow me if you're part of this firm. Just hear me out. If you want to hire someone to explore your strategic options, be my guest. Spend the millions of dollars and try to identify whether you should sell, merge, or buy. Okay. But I'd like to think I've got the executives who are really on the inside who can sit with me if they're capable enough and explain to me and talk to me and we can work together on strategies. I also don't need someone to come in and take the time to get to know my analytics department and say, huh, it looks like you've got 7 analytics people, and we think you should have 9 because the 7 are not as efficient. We think that you've been signing players like Devers and you traded Betts. I believe as your consultant, I would have kept Mookie Betts and let Devers go. I've got an idea. Here's your flow chart, your org chart. Here's who reports to who. Here's a Facebook. You want to get to know people on your lower level? Why? You think the chairman, the CEO of Comcast, knows the people manning the customer service lines? Nah, you make an appearance. You walk through for 2 minutes once a year. You say hello, shake some hands, kiss some babies, sign some autographs, and move on. It is perfectly normal that I wouldn't have a relationship with a bird dog scout in Venezuela. Or that I wouldn't exactly know who's doing telephone sales for Jupiter. But I'm going to go there and make an appearance. I don't need to hire a consultant for 7 figures to tell me what that person does. I've got people in sales who tell me what that person does. And I've got the ability to say to my VPs, I don't want that person doing that. I want that person doing this. Let's discuss. Craig Breslow had a quote that said, we are using an outside consulting firm to help me wrap my arms around this operation. It's big. Give me a break. It's grown a ton in the last 3 or 4 years. And with that comes the need to understand who are our people? What work are they doing? Is it impacting our on-field outcomes in a meaningful way? You think that every employee has an overarching job description, no matter what level you are at whatever company? Take a baseball team. It's a great example. The people who are the scouts in the Dominican, or the people who are the data input code writers, the people who are in your inside sales force selling tickets, the people who are in your accounts payable department. Do some of those people have more of an impact on the on-field products than others? Of course. That's like saying at Pepsi, do the scientists who are coming up with the formulas for the new drinks, do they impact the product more than the delivery drivers from the bottling companies? That's an obvious one. You don't need a consulting company to tell you that. So Craig Breslow knows that. So then we got to go deeper. For the people who do have the impact on your major league product and wins and losses, you think that what a consulting firm is going to do is come in and tell you what they could be doing better in order to help you win more games? What about the five layers that you've got below on the way to that person? Or are you asking the consultant to tell you how your farm director can help, or how your scouting director can help, or how your VP of player personnel can help? Because if my GM came to me and asked me how those guys were going to help me do my job, I'd fire the GM. You're not ready to be a GM if you don't know what your lieutenants do, and your lieutenants aren't worth squat if they can't tell you what their lieutenants do, and it goes down and down the chain. Your head of scouting has an absolute understanding of his scouting area, but are there some scouts doing things that he does not know about? Of course there are. It's normal. The head of player development is supposed to be aware of what's going on in the training room at single A, but you've got three layers below you before you get to that to give you an idea of what's happening and what could be better. But as the head of player development, you are putting a system in place that all of the teams have to follow. And then you've got people who go and enforce the fact that it's being followed. The chairman of Fritos doesn't go to the plant to make sure the Fritos are the right ingredients and taste the way they're supposed to taste. He'll make an appearance once in a while, but that's not his job. So for the life of me, I can't figure out how this company is able to accomplish what it accomplishes. But if you're getting people to hire you, the joke's on them, not you. That means you're a good business person. So congratulations. As for Red Sox fans, I'd be worried. I really would. I'd still be thankful for the four rings, but I'd be worried. I think I'm going to make a rule that anyone who signs Deshaun Watson to $230 million doesn't get public money for a ballpark. It's a small little specific rule, I grant you. It doesn't have great application in other cities. It's pretty nuanced. Not. Word came out yesterday that the Cleveland Browns are looking for $1.2 billion to upgrade Cleveland Stadium. It's going to cost $2.4. They'll come up with the 1.2, but they need 1.2 from you. I wonder whether he goes to Deshaun Watson and asks for a percentage of that 1.2, since he's just getting a gift of $230 million guaranteed, and all he had to do was have some questionable decision-making, to say the least, if not some prurient and salacious, horrific behavior. There's a lot going on here with the $2.4 billion that would be a new stadium, or 1.2 to upgrade. What's going on here is that owners have decided that now is a great time, right now. And people are taking note of all of the asks that exist out there, whether it's the Bears, whether it's the White Sox, the Diamondbacks, the Browns. It's the same playbook, either renovate or it's going to not pay. Might as well just get a new building. And people are suffering great prisoner of the moment issues because they're acting as though this is all new. It's not. Go back to the first wave of new stadium financing, which starts all the way back in Camden Yards, which is now an old building that was the subject of great issue when the team was sold to Rubenstein. All the way through the White Sox guaranteed rate, which is now outdated and needs a new stadium. Atlanta got one for the Olympics. Now they got a new one. There's all sorts of stadium deals that happen, but they're constant. Are people taken aback by the amounts? Or are they saying that we've learned that giving money to billionaires isn't going to pay off the way they promised it was going to do? Yet the public money keeps coming. So I think there has to be a different rule, a better rule. And here's what I think that rule should be. If you make bad signings and your team is unsuccessful, then you can't get public money. If you sign players who are successful, who are good, and you sign good deals, that gets you points. It's like going to a carnival. I want the public to be able to give tickets out to an owner who can then redeem those tickets. And like in a carnival, if you have very few tickets, you get a little tiny stuffed animal that is harsh and you can't snuggle with. And if you get a lot of tickets, you can bring out the big dog, the one that you need to put right in the car because it's so big and then it doesn't fit in your car. And the way you get a ticket is by efficiency of how you run your team. If you have a high payroll and don't win, no ticket for you because you're moronic. If you have a low payroll and win, you got yourself a big stuffed animal. If you sign questionable players both off and on the field, ticketless. If you sign men who are good for the community and perform, multiple scores of tickets. In my theory, this isn't to say John Fisher gets no tickets, because I don't agree that he gets no tickets. He just doesn't know necessarily what to do with the tickets that he gets. But the A's, as crappy as their attendance is, let's not forget, A, they're having a great month. They may have the best bullpen in baseball. They've been competitive. Their windows of winning happen. They don't win a ring, but their windows of winning happen. He gets tickets. He loses some of them because of the clumsiness of relocation and all the other stuff he's done. But wouldn't it be amazing? And I would volunteer to participate in this action. Jerry Reinsdorf, a few tickets. The Chicago Bears, ticketless. Stop telling me that you're moving to downtown and give me renderings. And then Arlington steps up and says, no, no, we're still talking to them. No, we're not. We're done with Arlington. Well, you own 300 acres there. What do you mean you're done? You got to do something. No tickets for you. I think that'd be absolutely hysterical if that's how you earned public financing. Forget referendums. Forget negotiating with commissioners and politicians. It is a set scale. You know what you're going into when you got to put ping pong balls in a fishbowl. You know what you got to do, how many darts you need to break balloons with, and you know exactly what the prizes are. The governor of Illinois came out yesterday. Did you see this quote, Matt? OMG. Governor is not very happy about the financing going on in downtown. As you know, he was not a part of that. And when you're not a part of something, you get upset. Not handling all your constituencies and being smart about where people sit during press conferences, fewer tickets for you. Jay Monahan, you're going to announce a merger and then not tell Tiger Woods? Oh, and then not do the merger? No tickets for you. The governor had to come out and say, the money that comes from a hotel tax does not belong to the Bears. It does not belong to the White Sox. It does not belong to any sports team. That belongs to the taxpayer. That is a misleading statement by a source. And the reason why that's so misleading is that there are certain tax streams that can only be used for certain things. In Florida, the tourist tax money could only be used for convention centers, ballparks, and facilities. You couldn't use it for teachers or infrastructure or police presence. You just couldn't. You can change that at the legislative level. You can go all the way to Tallahassee if you want. You can go to the capital of Illinois. I'm sorry, Miss Lang, my fourth grade teacher. Springfield. That could be Missouri. What's the capital of Illinois, Coca? God dang it. I cannot believe I forgot my state capitals. I am absolutely freaking embarrassed right now. I think it's Springfield. Unless that's Massachusetts. So this source from the mayor, from the governor, talking to the Sun Times, going through this whole situation about financing, and all I keep thinking is, nothing's going to change. The Bears are going to be the Bears. The Haslams are going to ask for money when they can, when they want to, and all the owners are going to get it. because the owners look at the politicians and they say, listen, give me my money. It's just business. Sorry, citizens, it's nothing personal.